I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Today's episode is sponsored by ByHeart, which is an infant nutrition company built from the ground up to deliver real innovation on behalf of babies and parents. Their mission is simple: make the best formula in the world. In our house, we never skim on family time together on the weekends. Instead of racing around crazy, we prioritize time at home, time to relax, time to do fun, crazy things that we wouldn't have ordinarily. And you know who else doesn't skim? ByHeart. ByHeart is the only American-made infant formula with globally sourced ingredients to use organic, grass-fed whole milk without a drop of skim. Whole milk is full of healthy fats like naturally occurring MFGM, which play an important role in babies' brain development and growth. Are you curious about ByHeart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with code name Zibby20 for a limited time. Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, and you're listening to Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. This 30-minute podcast features a new author interviewed by me every single day, 365 days a year, for about 30 minutes. I am also the publisher for Zibby Books, which publishes 12 books a year in fiction and memoir. Our books are already out now, and you can check it out on zibbybooks.com. And we have a magazine called Zibby Mag, where we have lots of wonderful essays and lifestyle features. That's at zibbymag.com. We have classes at zibbyclasses.com. And I recently opened a bookstore in LA called Zibby's Bookshop at 1113 Montana Avenue at 11th Street in Santa Monica. I hope that you are able to enjoy some of our other offerings, but this here podcast is the basis of all of it and started in 2018. And no matter what I do, this is basically my favorite thing. Enjoy. Adrienne Brodeur is back on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books a second time after her amazing memoir, Wild Game. Now she's back with a novel called Little Monsters. Adrienne is the author of Wild Game, which I mentioned, which was selected as a best book of the year by NPR and The Washington Post and is in development as a Netflix film. She founded the literary magazine Zoetrope, All Story, with Francis Ford Coppola, and currently serves as executive director of Aspen Words, a literary nonprofit and program of the Aspen Institute. She splits her time between Cambridge and Cape Cod, where she lives with her husband and children. Welcome, Adrienne. Thanks so much for coming back on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss your novel, Little Monsters. Congratulations.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Zibby.
Oh, it's my pleasure. As you know, I was like the biggest fan ever of Wild Game, as like everyone else in the world was. But I still talk about it. I still think about it. I mean, that moment when you came to our book club and like held up the necklace, or remember, would you know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
That was like the coolest. So I could not wait to dive into this book. And, you know, your writing is so beautiful and it did not disappoint in any way. It's so great to read how you are as a novelist. I don't know. It's so exciting. So tell listeners what Little Monsters is about.
Well, for those of your listeners who have read Wild Game, it will come as no surprise that I'm obsessed with family secrets and that they loom large in this book. So this book takes a kaleidoscopic look at a different family, thank goodness a fictional family, the Gardners, which is a very small family. It's a family of three, a father and two adult children. And it sort of comes at this inflection point in all of their lives. So you know, just briefly, Adam, who is the patriarch, he's about to turn 70. He's really worried about his relevance in the world. He's a marine biologist, and he's determined to have one great discovery still on his horizon. Ken, his son, has just sealed a huge real estate business deal, which has sort of catapulted him into a new stratosphere of wealth. And really, his purpose, or what that wealth will enable him to do, is run for office, which is his big goal. And then Abby, who's sort of the younger sister, she's 38, Ken's 41. She has finally found her voice as an artist and is about to be discovered in a big way. So we know all these things as we come into the novel, that these things are at stake for each character, but we also know that they're kind of holding them secret, that there's the family's a little delicate and they're waiting for the right moment to make their announcements. And as it turns out, it's all coming to a head when these disclosures will take place at Adam's 70th birthday party, which is during the summer in August. And then when you start to realize as you move towards this big day is that things are not as they seem and the ground is shifting and everyone is keeping secrets.
Yes. Perfect. Yeah. One storyline is that Adam, the patriarch, is battling, you know, bipolar and has a complicated relationship with his own meds. And what does he, you know, he has this massive intellect that he feels sometimes is inhibited by his medication. And he's like on the cusp of figuring something out. And so he's like, well, I can totally handle this. So in terms of mental illness and having a family member who, as an adult, you are in charge of your own care, how do you handle that in like a family ecosystem and the choices that go into that? And then how were you thinking about it as you wrote about it?
Right. I mean, well, Adam really isn't thinking about anyone but himself at that time. And he rationalizes it the way we all rationalize our decisions, but that he's, you know, no one's living at home with him. His children are adults. And he truly believes that if his mind is sort of liberated from the anesthetizing effects of his medication, that he will be able to connect these dots. So I feel like he's getting little hints, he's having dreams, he's writing things down, he's making connections, which in some ways, you know, we all can relate to in writing books or what have you. You're sort of listening and trying to make sense of these things. And he's excited about doing this. And he makes this somewhat rash decision to go off his meds in order to succeed. So we have to see what happens then. I don't want to give anything too big away.
I'm not going to say, I won't go further than that. You also have the setup with a journalist being wowed by Abby's work and her studio, and which is her late mom's studio, and how she's just has this talent that is nascent in a way and about to, as you said, be explored and publicized a lot more. And I love how you give us this point of view from the external person who's coming in, so that we all feel like we're walking on the beach and going through this interview and like learning about her. And, you know, I don't know, I could just like feel the wind from the ocean and all of that, because you make it so, you know, multisensory. Tell me a little more about Abby and her character and even the painting, the artistic side, and how it contrasts or doesn't with the very scientific brain of her dad and then the like financial brain of her brother.
Right. I mean, these are three wildly different characters, right? And they're all ambitious and they're all successful. And in some ways, I set it in 2016 because I felt that that was a moment where the ground did feel like it was shifting. And, you know, with Abby in particular, I was looking at a woman who was finally sort of finding her voice. And I think a lot of women at this moment in time can relate to that, even in ways that we didn't realize we were holding back our voices. So it was really thrilling to give her this sort of rising power of figuring out what she wanted to convey by her art and allowing her to do that, even though, you know, there could be serious ramifications because she was painting some very personal narratives.
Yes.
So, yeah, I found her a very interesting character who is evolving. I mean, I feel like with characters, some of them just, you know, are there on the page and arrive you know, I never had the experience before of a character arriving fully formed. And at least Adam did that for me. So why a 70-year-old bipolar narcissist just came that easily? But I swear I would put my hands over the keyboard and he would speak. And that was great. And with every other character, it really was, you know, that process of having to write into them. You think you know them as the author, but you have to actually, you know, put them in situations where you learn a lot about them. So I feel, you know, really I had to get several hundred pages into the book to understand who they were and then to allow myself to be surprised by their actions and all of that. So it was really, honestly, it was really fun to write a novel and have that kind of freedom to see who those people were.
And for people who don't know the secrets you were referring to with Malabar and everybody from Wild Game, can you give just like a little preview of a little snippet of
Wild Game?
No, just of your family background and how it relates not to that book, but to this book based on your, like your own sort of what the baggage that we all bring to every piece of work that we do.
Sure. And I come from a family of prodigious secret keepers. And, you know, it didn't just start with my parents' generation, even the generations before, there were half siblings and other families. And there was sort of all sorts of stuff. And having grown up in that environment, I feel so attuned to the dark power that secrets have over us. I mean, I think Jung called them as psychic poison. In as much as they keep the holder of the secret sort of alienated from his or her community. And so it was sort of liberating for me to, you know, in Wild Game, it was very much a particular secret and it was my version of it. Obviously, it was memoir, so it was nonfiction and me walking through that story. And what's sort of delightful about a fictional universe, of course, it's all made up, but that I could explore it in this sort of kaleidoscopic perspective because this novel is told in multiple perspectives. And so you see what people think they know versus what they know. And they're always these shifting layers, which I really enjoyed thinking about and writing about.
You also touch on sort of aging in general and the generational shifts. Like, for example, Adam, when he sees his doctor, and he's like, how did the doctor get so young? And why is the doctor not shaking my hand? And what about looking me in the eye? And, you know, I feel like it's this, you know, bumping up against culture and all of that as well.
And there's a lot of that, as there is, you know, I'm sure at all of our dinner tables with our own children, when they're aghast at our blunders with, you know, the current language. I mean, it's, you know, I think this is as old as time itself, right? These cycles of parents and children and how we go from being so darn cool to really so just abysmal.
How involved are your kids and your work in general?
Let's see. I scream, quiet. And sometimes they're quiet. you know, I jest. My kids are great. Madeline has, my daughter has read this book and really loved it, which was fun. My son isn't a huge reader and I don't think is interested on that level. But when I come to a struggle or plot point in the book as I'm writing, I often just talk to my family about it, whether that's while we're on a drive or in a walk. And my son actually, he solved some big problems. So the outside character in the novel, there's a secret keeper who comes in from the outside, who's not, you know, officially part of the Gardner family, but has stumbled upon a secret that makes her very intrigued by them. I mean, it was my son who actually came up with how she could discover her identity. That was very opaque, but I had to.
Nice. Okay.
It was like family banter. How would a character find out this? And it's, you know, they think so differently than I do, and it's fun.
That's excellent. Oh my gosh.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
When did you, like, which piece of this made you think, okay, this is going to be a whole novel? Like, what inspired it? Like, which piece?
Right. I mean, I think, so I was on my Wild Game tour and I got sent home, like everyone got sent home in March of 2012. And I think I'm a very...
2020.
Thank you. March 2020. Ooh. I tend to be an intuitive writer. I don't, you know, people often ask sort of what I'm planning next and what I'm thinking about. So I'd say what happens to me is I start paying very close attention to where my mind seems to go. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think Mary Oliver said it best. She said, pay attention, be astonished, write about it. And that is very much the way I walk through my writing life. And so when I came home, which I was actually kind of happy to do after being on the road for so long, I noticed I was just thinking a lot about siblings and sibling dynamics. Several of my friends have complicated relationships with their siblings. I have a lot of siblings from, you know, different step families. And I kept circling that territory. And then, you know, from their characters to develop, and from there you sort of start writing. And I went to the original sibling story, of course, which is Cain and Abel, looking for inspiration, got so little from that story. That story is so bare bones. Like, what happens? You know, God's like, yeah, you out. And I remember just thinking, what am I supposed to do with that? I thought it was the But I did find the structure there, because that made me think, okay, this is an interesting thing to move towards, gift giving, that might be a concept. And I didn't even really realize how firmly that had taken hold, because I, you know, kept reading different versions and thinking, you know, I got nothing here. But, you know, some little, you know, your mind collects things in such interesting ways when you're constructing a book. And I mean, it's such a cliche to say, but it's really like, you know, flying the plane while you're building it.
Interesting. Tell me more. And I'm very aware of your work with the Aspen Institute and all the things you do to help so many other writers. But for people who might not know, talk about what it's like sort of running that and how you got involved in that and what kind of resource that is for authors out there.
Sure. Thank you. My professional background was as an editor, and I worked as an editor for years, first with the short story magazine Zoetrope, then as a book editor. And then about 10 years ago, I did this lovely pivot to being a director of a literary nonprofit, which has been one of those wonderful experiences in my life where I've gotten to stay in this world that I love so much, which is all things literary, but tackling it from a new angle. And we have lots of programs at Aspen Words. We have a big summer writing conference. We have an annual literary prize, which celebrates a work of fiction that has a social theme. We have residencies. We just do all sorts of things. And we try to support writers from sort of fledgling to famous. And it's really been, it's been a dream job for me. I really enjoy it.
Who is like the target audience for Aspen Words in the summer and all of that? Like, I know it's probably sold out at this point, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's very different depending on our program. So, you know, we have an author speaking series that's really for, you know, people in the Roaring Fork Valley. Our prize is, you know, national and international. We want to celebrate strong works of fiction that also create dialogues around important issues. So I would say that is for everyone. And then Aspen Summer Words is really for writers who want to come and participate in a writer's conference where there are lots of workshops in fiction and nonfiction and poetry and every other thing.
Amazing. Well, it was so fun going to the prize ceremony this year and hearing all the great authors who were nominated. And
hopefully we'll get you to Aspen one of these days.
Oh, yes. I do very badly with altitude, I have to say.
Oh, yeah.
And then I took like altitude pills once that made me completely crazy and that kind of ruined that trip. But anyway,
we'll find you in other places.
I know. I'm dying to go. I'm dying to go back. It's been many, many years. And so now that the novel is coming out and it's so exciting, are you more tempted to dive back into memoir, personal essays, personal writing, or going into fiction again? Like, where do you see your writing career going as you plow forward?
I will say, I think I'm planning on sticking with fiction. We'll see if something comes up that moves me. You know, as I said before, I tend to sort of move towards where my heart leads me. And I have thoughts, you know, very embryonic, where my mind keeps landing for the next book. And it's definitely fiction. And also, honestly, it's just, well, you're in the same boat, having written a memoir and you have a novel coming out, right?
Okay.
So I will let you know that it is a lot more relaxing to be facing a novel's publication than a memoir, simply because, you know, you're obviously, your work is going to be judged, but you feel less that your life is going to be judged, which is really a different way. I was incredibly anxious before my memoir came out, and I feel, you know, much more relaxed. I mean, that might change, but I'm actually really looking forward to this period of when I have conversations like these, because, you know, I think, what is that saying? No two persons read the same book. I mean, what's wonderful about when your book comes out is that you actually start hearing what people think it's about, because it might actually be different from what you wrote about. I mean, you know what you're writing about, but everyone brings their own lens. And so it's such an interesting time, I think.
And what books have caught your interest lately?
Oh, I just finished sharing parts of a title, Monsters by Claire Dieterer. I don't know if you've read that yet.
I haven't yet.
It is such a fascinating examination of what to do and how to feel about the artists we love who might have been monstrous in their personal life. And she's just got a brilliant mind and an interesting take, and I found it pure pleasure to read. I am in the thick. I've just started Abraham Verghese's The Covenant of Water, which I've been waiting, you know, 10 years for, because I loved Cutting for Stone so much. I've actually feel like I've had a really fruitful reading period in the last few months. So just, you know, lots of great books. I always read our shortlist for the Literary Prize. So there were some wonderful works there. And I really love the winning book, The Haunting of Hachihotak. So it's been good.
That's amazing. What advice would you have both for people writing memoirs and novels? And it can be one or both.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm a bore in terms of my advice, but my best, biggest, most powerful advice is just to do it every day, to try to get into a rhythm. None of us have time. It can seem like such an absurd thing to be doing alone in a room, talking to characters, whether they are yourself or others. But, you know, really there's something about the diligence and discipline. And that is when the muse shows up. You can't wait for her. But if you do it each day, and I am not a fast writer. I mean, on my best day, you and I have had this conversation. On my best day, I think I write one page. But if you do that every day, you know, in a year, that's 365 pages. But when you're really in it all the time, and that doesn't mean every day has to be a productive writing day, but when you're thinking about it and familiar with it, and, you know, the themes interconnect, I'm a little bit like Adam wanting to connect the dots, minus going off medicine, you know, it's just that's how it all holds together, at least for me. I mean, I do know the people who go off to a hut and churn out a book in a month or, you know, in a night, and it's amazing. It's not me.
I understand.
Yeah.
And then my last thing is just, you have such a gift of writing about the scenery and the place in Cape Cod, and, you know, just all the, it's just such a sensory experience reading your work, this one and Wild Game too, but it's almost escapist in how many senses you evoke and all that. So is that a deliberate writing technique? Does it just happen? Do you focus on it?
I feel like it sort of just happens. I mean, that said, the Cape is an endlessly fascinating landscape for me. And I do have to start writing about other places, I'm sure, because I don't know how many books I can do that are set there. But, you know, obviously it's a place of privilege and class, and some people live there and some people summer there. But what really animates me is the natural world that's there. And, you know, it's constantly changing by the hour, by the minute, the weather, the tides, the light. And it's also just, it's so fragile. It's essentially a sandbar that is someday going to be swept back into the sea. And I think our settings, you know, whether it's, you know, whatever environment we occupy, you know, mountains, plains, city, you know, these are all huge metaphors for life. But I find that when I'm writing, it's such a, you know, when you're in your character's head, it's such a break and a gift to be able to reflect deeply on a sensory experience. So you're going through plop, 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 but you also, you know, put a morsel of food in your mouth and your cheeks, you feel that sour thing on the back from an apple or something. I mean, you just, all of that stuff just makes the reading experience, but it makes our living experience so much richer. And I think it's just about slowing down and noticing.
It's like a meditation. Isn't that what you're supposed to do when you meditate? Like notice all that stuff?
Yeah. I don't meditate, but I think of writing as, you know, meditating in some ways, because it's this thing I do for myself and I do slow down and I do think, I mean, I guess you're not supposed to think when you meditate, but I do, you know, you experience deeply when you're writing, I think.
Yeah. I think it counts.
Okay. Check. Now, if I could just work exercising into that, I get my fingers going.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. Well, congratulations. You're just such a beautiful writer. Congrats on Little Monsters. And I'm so excited for it to come out.
Oh, thank you so much. I've really liked having this conversation.
All right. All right. Bye, Adrian.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.